Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am absolutely thrilled to have with us today my friend and cohort, Laura King. And Laura, I really hope that you can talk to us a little bit today, share with us some of your jazz pianist suggestions.
Oh, boy.
All right?
Yes.
Excellent.
Here we go.
Here we go. So, Laura, give us the 411.
I grew up with dogs. My mother had Belgian sheepdogs as a young lady. And they were too much dog for me, and so they investigated and eventually landed on skipper keys.
Yes.
For us to have.
Yes.
Because that would be more appropriate for me.
Yes.
And now as we have aged, my sister has Belgian sheepdogs, and my mother has reverted to skipper keys.
I've seen the most adorable photo of you
at
like nine.
Yes.
With your skipper key. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. Charming. Anyway, I no longer have either of those.
Okay.
Not either stomach gut. No, either Belgians Belgian or skipper keys.
Or skipper keys. No.
Not for
okay.
me.
Okay. All right.
No.
And so do you have a personal breed anymore?
I have co-owned and co-bred some English cocker litters.
Okay.
We have two pet Shih Tzu.
They're adorable.
Which I would have 100 of, but most recently, actually, I co-bred a foxhound litter with Lisa Miller.
Yes.
Our puppies
are... And how are the foxhound
they're
puppies?
They're 10 days old, and yes. They're cute as buttons. I mean, they're 10 days old, so...
Anybody need a foxhound?
Yeah, exactly. Well, there were only five, so I think... I know. Thank God. I think they're... We've got that covered. I was going to give them as Christmas gifts.
You were threatening a twofer.
Yes, exactly. But anyway, I think we've got that covered.
Excellent.
Yeah. So
excellent.
Anyway, and actually also I've become recently, well, or maybe not so recently involved with Springer Spaniels.
Right.
So I do co-own right. a number of those and
yes.
have co-bred a few.
Yes. So you have, working with Robin Novak.
Yes.
Run about eight years ago?
Eight. 8 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A dog that was in contention for the number one dog, all breeds.
Yes.
Yes. And we know that that was kind of a challenge.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Would be an understatement, but yeah. Yes.
Everybody yes. sort of dreams of this, Laura. You know, I mean, think about it. When you're a kid, you know, I want to have the number one
yes.
dog, right?
It's the stuff that dreams and nightmares are made of.
Well, yes.
I have to tell you.
I understand that. So
yes.
we're going to talk a little bit about
okay.
that.
Okay.
Okay. And so talk about the upsides of it. What is it that's fun?
Well, obviously, first of all, the winning is fun. The sort of camaraderie that we got from that in the sport,
setup.
Yeah, was kind of amazing, actually. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of really great friendships that developed from that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people reveal themselves at every level.
Right.
And
good and bad.
Good and bad, absolutely. But it was really heartwarming to see a lot of the things that you don't expect.
Right.
And so that's sort of uplifting, that part of it. There's also, obviously, the downside of that, where you get to see the worst in people.
Right. Not so good.
No, not so good. But in the end, for me, that part was probably the best part, was the friendships and the camaraderie that you get to develop from that.
And I think, you know, what you're talking about there, that applies at any
yes.
level.
Yes, yes.
At any level. What is the best? I just saw somebody has it all over social media. What's your favorite thing about the sport,
mm-hmm.
other than the dogs?
It has to be the camaraderie. The dogs, I love the dogs, and in the end, they're what keep you at it, but mm-hmm. take that away, the people are really
the friends that
the
become
best part,
family.
Absolutely. It is your family, I mean, in the end, because this is, you spend 24/7.
More time here.
More time here than with your actual family, so yeah, it does become your family, so that is the best part of what came from that. Yeah.
Awesome. And so, there's got to be some dark corners there. We're not going to, like, have a big calling out.
No.
But...
Okay, fine. I have a list. No, I'm just kidding. The things that were frustrating about that to me, which the list could go on and on, but for me, the most part, again, was the people. Somewhat the judges in the sense that there wasn't always the most reliability in the sense that one week your dog is beautiful and then suddenly the next week, oh, maybe I would change this about him. And you always have your suspicions about how that comes up, like who's talking behind the scenes, who put this bug in your ear. I don't know, and this maybe is not going to come out exactly right, but I get frustrated with one week your dog is the most beautiful one they've seen. And then the next week, well, I wish that it had this thing.
Or didn't have that other thing.
Correct. And I don't know that people intentionally set out to do that sort of detriment to your dog. I think that things come up in conversation. You and I are having a conversation about a dog, and you say, oh, yeah, but one time I saw him, and he did this. And so then that person that you're speaking to, the next time they see the dog, is like, maybe I did see a sort of a glimpse of that, or not, even if it doesn't, but it's in their head then. Right. And then it's all they can focus on.
Don't think about the elephant.
Exactly. But I don't know how much of that occurs.
By accident?
By accident, and how much of it occurs intentionally. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of psychology that goes into it.
That's a really good point that I don't think people really think about.
I was raised in a very straightforward family. Like, you address it.
Right.
If there's something, it's addressed. And everybody speaks what they're thinking, right. And life goes on. And so it was very hard for me to wrap my head around all of the back channels and the innate psychology of the things that went on. And so that part to me was probably the most frustrating. Right. Well, not probably. It was absolutely the most frustrating.
Yeah.
And like I said, I don't know. The good part of me wants to believe that there was a fair amount of that that didn't happen intentionally. But the longer I'm here, the more I think maybe that wasn't the case.
Give everybody the benefit of the doubt, man.
Right, exactly.
And a lot of hours, a lot of time on the road.
The one thing I will say about trying to get a dog to the top position that I think people don't realize, there are so many facets, so many factors that have to align. You have to have the right dog. That dog has to have not only the right confirmation, but the right temperament for it.
Yes.
Because you're going to ask a lot of it. And you need for him to give or her to give 1,000%
every time.
You have to have a handler that can get that from the dog. You have to know what the dog needs and be able to read the dog and feel the dog and see how it's being affected by the travel and by the time on the road and the whatever. Then you have to have clients that not only are financially able to support this endeavor, but who is supportive in the sense that when you call and say, well, we were third, or we lost the breed, or whatever, that they're not going to say, well, what the hell were you thinking going there?
Right.
Instead, they're going to be your cheerleader, because that's really important. Because otherwise, I mean, it's a whole emotional roller coaster, and if everybody
is
down...
We're back to the psychology thing.
Yes, exactly. If everybody's down at the same time, it's just not going to fly. So you have to have that. And then you have to have, if you're a handler... This is what you do for a living. So now, not only, so you're off doing all of this stuff, but one assumes that you have a string of dogs. So you have to have a support system in that sense. You have to have a great kennel team. You have to have a great handling team. Like, there are people who are out there still every week.
Showing
the rest of the dogs and going through all of that work so that there is still income. Because it turns out income is important.
That's what they tell me.
I've heard. So, and then the timing of all of that is of the utmost importance. As weird as it is, we're back to the psychology of it. Whoever is showing the dog needs to be appreciated by the sport. Whoever owns the dog has to be appreciated by the sport. The effort of all of those people has to be appreciated by the sport. And if it's not, then it tends to not work in your favor. There are so many facets of the campaign that people don't realize that it seems like it would be a dream at the time, but then when you get into it and trying to coordinate all of those things, it can be a little bit of a nightmare.
So I think it's really important that people keep in mind, I could probably tell you the last couple years worth of number one dogs.
Exactly. When you start to get into it, in the end, really only the people that are in it are the ones who remember. People remember great dogs.
Yes.
And they remember,
they're gonna remember
who had great careers. Dog. Absolutely. Right. They may not remember how the stats ended up. Absolutely. Eh. Absolutely. Right. So
and there's a
it's hard to remember that when you're in the middle of it, though, I will tell you.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
I do think, though, as frustrating as it can be, whether you're number one or number two or whatever, great dogs are great dogs.
Absolutely.
And how many great dogs are sitting in a backyard?
More than we know, I'm sure. Because they don't have all those other things going for them. As a handler, you may see that great dog and say to the people, I think this dog could be a great dog. Let's see what we can do. But then to be able to get all of those things together
put that puzzle together.
Yes, to put the puzzle together, exactly. It can be a really frustrating thing. So the stats in the end maybe aren't necessarily the be-all, end-all. There are maybe a lot of great dogs that are sitting at number 20 in their breed because they just don't have the formula.
And that's okay.
It is okay. Absolutely, it's okay. Because those are still great dogs.
Right.
And they have a lot to contribute.
Right.
The people have a lot to contribute.
And I think you've really hit on something that's so important that people need to really, really remember. When you get frustrated and you're, you know, maybe the number one owner-handler dog in your breed, but you can't get past X or you can't get past Y, that doesn't take away from the quality necessarily of
the dog you have. And don't think that it goes unrecognized. It is being recognized. It may not be awarded every time, but it is recognized by good dog people.
There are good dog people in this.
There are still, absolutely.
And
without a doubt.
Go find them. Go talk to them.
Right. Exactly.
So I think the other thing, Laura, that I enjoy watching you show dogs because you have such a gift.
Thank you.
I mean that very sincerely. You have such a gift with the, we'll call them special needs dogs.
Well,
I understand because But seriously, there's a lot of dogs out there that they don't come pre-programmed.
This is true. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And I think that the people who can take a push-button dog and stand at the end of the leash and wear a pretty suit are great.
I would like to do that. Is that an option? Where do I sign up for that?
I, too, would like to sign up for that. But I think that there's a whole lot more dogs out there that need some extra help. Little TLC.
This is true.
And so I want to talk a little bit about how we work with those dogs. Mm-hmm. Because there's plenty of people out there, owner handlers, other professional handlers, that have that, what we were talking about earlier, the PhD in dog handling.
Yeah.
Those special dogs that just need, they're going to challenge you. And they're going to take you to another level. And so what do? You have to adapt.
I think the problem for me is I don't know how to put what happens into words. It's a reading, it's a learning process, and it comes from, I guess, I don't know, I haven't thought a whole lot about it, but I guess that it just comes from having done it repeatedly. And so it's a process of reacting to them in the sense that you see them. You can look in their face, you can read their eyes, you can read their body language, you can feel them on a leash and then react accordingly, allegedly. That
You're
is
right.
the goal.
You're
but
right.
I don't have any specific way to describe it. I don't have a magic potion. It's
but
a matter of just working repeatedly with them or any animal and being able to feel what is about to happen and then to react accordingly to it.
Before
hopefully
it
to preempt, yes, whatever right. said behavior one
Might
is assuming is.
And so when you have your hands on this dog, you have a dog, whether it's your own dog, whether it's a client dog, and you can feel those muscles are just tight as a rock going down their back.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just look in their eyes and you can see this dog is like, coming undone like
a ball. Coming undone, right, yes.
And so, T-touch, where do you go?
When I see something like that happening, I guess, I try to get them out of the middle of wherever we are. If we're in the middle of a busy aisle, let's try to go to the corner. If we're in the middle of a busy dog show, let's try to get out in a way into an aisle that's empty. And then I try to get down on their level. And for the most of the breeds that we show, I have found that if you work their tails, if you stroke their tails, for whatever reason, that seems to be the key to their brain. Or maybe not the key, but a link to their brain. In the sense that if you can get them to relax their tail, that relaxes everything. It's an extension of their spine, and it relaxes everything from there up. And they can start to recompensate in the sense that they can get themselves together and kind of take a breath and relax a little bit. The other thing I find is if I move them just in a circle, get them to think, stop focusing on everything that you're looking at now, let's just look at this and refocus on where our feet are going and what's in front of us and whatever.
Right.
I find that helps.
Figure eights.
Sure. Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, because they have to think about it.
Right.
They have to think about their feet instead of the ground is falling underneath me, the ceiling is falling on me, the judge is going to touch me, the whatever.
Right. Yeah, I think that that is one of the things that I find.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, too, you have to have empathy.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, you have to know. Getting after a dog who is on the edge of losing its mind is going to do nothing but send it over the edge. You have to be able to read that the dog is not being difficult, that it truly is in distress. there are dogs who are just being difficult.
Right.
And those require a different approach.
Okay, so let's take our difficult dog. Mm-hmm. You understand that they've thought about this mm-hmm. and they've decided.
They've chosen.
Correct.
To disagree with you.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so when you have a dog that chooses to disagree with your suggestion.
Mm-hmm. I may follow the same initial pattern where we dismiss ourselves to a corner or away from the center aisle. But then we have a discussion about
leadership.
Yes. Leadership. That's a very diplomatic way to put it. And try to convince them, maybe, that it's their idea.
Yes.
To be the leader. And here's how to be a good leader. You stand up. And you let the judge touch you. And you let me put your feet where I would like them. So initially it's the same approach, but the steps are different. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Right. And it's so important to understand the difference between...
You have to be able to see the difference. Right. And it makes me sad, actually. You see a lot of dogs that I can clearly see are upset or confused or needy, being treated as if they're being
difficult
when in fact they're not. And those are two completely different approaches for me.
So kind of like today's version of the dog whisperer.
Yeah, I guess, yes. I try not to...
I know, that's... I know.
I've had the thought. I didn't really work on the TV either,
I know. I know one of the things that you don't think about it.
Right.
So you don't give yourself credit for it because you don't think about it.
Yeah,
you don't,
that's
you
true.
You don't feel like it's a skill because it comes to you naturally.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, again, we're having this conversation. You're right. I'm sorry. I don't feel like it's a skill. I feel like you could just be able to see what it is that they're doing and then react
appropriately. But you understand that it's a skill that not
they
everyone
tell me,
has.
They tell me that.
It's true.
That's what I hear.
And so I think it's important what you're sharing with the people is that you need to listen to the dogs.
Yes,
they'll tell you.
Absolutely.
They'll talk to you.
They'll tell you. They will absolutely tell you. And they'll tell you with their body language and they'll tell you with their eyes and they'll tell you with their muscle tone. Intenseness the tails and their ears and all of those things will tell you exactly what it is you need to know and to react to it.
And you just need to be able to hear what they're saying.
Absolutely. It's true.
Listen to the dogs.
Yes.
And wait, the dogs come first? Wait a minute.
No,
we heard this before.
That's wrong. That can't be right.
No, I'm pretty sure that's right.
Yeah, it is. Damn it.
Okay, so one of the things that I think we really want to touch on going forward, and this is now talking to some of our younger exhibitors, some of our newer exhibitors.
Yes.
What is your best advice? You came by this honestly, you grew up in it.
Mm-hmm. You mean to younger people who are doing this?
Not necessarily professional handling, but dogs in general. Our sport, growing our sport. What is your best advice?
Oh, boy. Well, that's tricky for so many reasons. I see so many, I'm going to use the word kids, but I don't necessarily mean that. I'm talking, 15 to 25 year old kids
young adults.
To me, young adults, who haven't spent the time to learn what they need to learn to get into this at a heavier level. And that's frustrating to me. I don't feel like, even having grown up in it, even given the fact that, let's say, you helped whelp your first litter when you were 6 years old and you grew up doing all of that, did you really learn? I mean, did you whelp a litter a year? Did you come from a family that had three litters the whole time you were growing up? Did you really learn about animal husbandry? Did you really learn about caring for animals? Did you really learn about, or were you, as well you should have been, off... Like being a kid, going to school and playing sports and doing all of those things. And granted, the dog sport is a great part of that. But if you really put the time in to present yourself, and I know you said not necessarily as a professional, but to present yourself as that person.
So there's
we
still,
learn to this day.
Right. Every day. And there's still more to learn even if you did grow up.
There. Absolutely. Well, absolutely. All those things, that was me. We whelped our first litter. I was 6 years old. I grew up, my parents had dogs from the time I was born. There is still so, so, so much to learn. And those were part of our chores. We took care of the dogs. We put them out and we put them in and we had to feed them and we had to do all that. But there was always a discussion at night. We didn't. But there was always a discussion at night. Did so-and-so eat? How did their stools look? What do you think their weight is? And that continued on, then you go to work for handlers, and they teach you the same things. And it's an endless cycle. And it is literally an endless cycle. Every day you can learn something new from someone
Absolutely.
Or from the dogs.
And for our future breeders and owners, I think that you are in a unique position to offer ideas, words of advice to people who are going to buy a purebred dog that they want to show.
Well, actually, you may be right in that sense, I guess. For the future breeders and owners of the world, do your research. There are people in any breed that you want to get into that have been doing it for 30 or 40 years. Learn from them. Glean their knowledge. You may not have to agree with everything they say, but get as much information as you can. Edit it yourself and take into it what you need to from that. There is a wealth of knowledge available, and there are plenty of people who wish to mentor people in their breeds, but it's a dying art, and people are not using what is available to them in this day and age. 30 years ago, there were great kennels full of beautiful dogs, and there was a type, and I'm going to speak of Springers only because I'm familiar with that. There was Telltale, there was Sutherland. Great kennels available, and they kept multiple dogs. That's not the
multiple
case. Multiple generations of multiple dogs. That's not the case anymore. Between the Animal Rights Coalition and just society as it is today, people frown upon that sort of thing, and those sorts of people are looked at as puppy mills, whether they be or not, which clearly they're not. But learn from that. Investigate the pedigrees. Look into the clearances. Look into everything that's available to you, and take from it what you need to create your own line or breeding or
talk
whatever.
Talk to the people
that have been doing it. Absolutely.
That actually knew those dogs.
Yes.
Actually had their hands on those dogs.
Absolutely. And those people are still available.
And if you ask them nicely, they'll talk to you.
Yes. I think people are nicer than what people give them credit for the most part.
But I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you are right. And I think just take a little initiative.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Laura.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.